Start a new Agada, which obviously has a tremendous amount of lessons that we should probably derive from it. And the title is Leadership in Crisis, or Crisis in Leadership, the way you want it. And it's really somehow connected to what we learned for the last 6 weeks with Tanuro Shel Achnai, where we saw how the rabbis, especially after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, basically had tremendous challenges between themselves, and also just how vis-a-vis their society or the Jewish community that was around them. The center of religion, the way they knew it before, was gone. The Beit HaMikdash is gone. The Sanhedrin is basically, does not have the same status it used to have, and they don't know exactly what to do. But what I would like to do is to see, and that's something very interesting. You know, people like to rewrite history, or people like to see history and to derive whatever conclusion they think fit to the present time. And what's happened was that the rabbis, after the destruction of the temple, and I'm talking about can be even hundreds of years after, especially if we talk about Rabbi Yochanan here, tried to understand what were the causes for the destruction and what can we learn from it. Now, it may be that Rabbi Yochanan gave it as a drasha for Shabbos morning, okay, or maybe Shabbos afternoon class, or maybe a Thursday morning class at the OU Israel Center. I don't know exactly when he gave this analysis of why or what are the reasons for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, but he had an idea, and he developed it, and that's what we're going to try to understand, is to try to understand... We're recording it, so... So we will try to understand what he wanted to share with us and how can we explain it or make it relevant to our times. So I know you have the English too on the other side. I would like to read the Hebrew and translate, so you can A, check me if I translate well, and B, I just don't like the translation so much. So I'll look at the Hebrew and we'll translate into English. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan said, "My dichtiv, what is the meaning of the verse? Ashrei Adam mefached tamid, umakshe libo ipol bera'a." This is a pasuk from Mishlei, which means in English, "Praiseworthy is the man who is always afraid or concerned, umakshe libo, and someone who hardened his heart will fall with bera'a." What will be bera'a? Will fall into mischief or will fall into evil decision or whatever it is. Now, don't forget, we will see in a minute what Rabbi Yochanan comes up with, which is a very famous story. We will analyze the story. But don't forget one thing, especially when we learn Gemara, it's always like that sometimes, because there are so many circles, we forget the initial question. The initial question that Rabbi Yochanan asked his students was what? How should we explain this verse? Ashrei Adam mefached tamid, umakshe libo, ipol bera. So that's this is our shelet, this is our billboard. What does it mean? What is the explanation for this pasuk? So, Rabbi Yochanan comes up with an interesting idea, and he says the following. Akamtza uvar kamtza charuv Yerushalayim. So there are two guys, Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, which, by the way, seems like a father and
a son.
Especially in the time of the Gemara, you will say Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabban Shimon Ben Gamliel, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakai. There was no last name. It was very much, by the way, like what we have in the Arab neighborhood. Abu El, whatever. Or Bana, whatever. There is no so much of a last name. It's like the son of the father. So, I don't know if there was a father and a son, but nevertheless, it's very interesting that there is Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. Charuv Yerushalayim. So, what's happened there? Dehu Gavra, third line, Dehu Gavra. There is one person that we don't know his name. There is Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. For now, we don't know the name of this guy. The Rachme Kamtza, that his friend was Kamtza, who the Baal Devave, and his enemy was Bar Kamtza. You know, many people quote that thing, and they think that Kamtza was the one to have the meal, and Bar Kamtza was the uninvited guest. It's not true. There is a guy, his name is unknown. We don't know the name of this guy. He likes Kamtza, and he totally disliked Bar Kamtza. Avat Seudata. So he made a meal, a big meal. Amar le Leshame. So he told his servant, Zil Aiti Li Kamtza. So there is a meal, and he probably sent his guests to get the other guests into the meal. So he says, bring me Kamtza. Azal Aiti Le Bar Kamtza. So instead he brought him Bar Kamtza. So he did two wrong things. A, he didn't invite the right guy, and B, he invited the really wrong guy. Now, the thing is like that. I know it's a very famous story, and sometimes because something is so famous, we don't pay attention to the details. There's something very interesting here. The Talmud says that this guy liked Kamtza and he didn't like Bar Kamtza. Do you think it was known to the public about his likes and dislikes or not? I would say we don't know, but probably not. Why? Because he told his servant, go ahead and get Kamtza. And the other guy goes ahead and get Bar Kamtza. Now I want to ask you a question. How a mistake like that can happen?
Because the servant didn't know who Kamtza and Bar Kamtza was.
Okay, so he didn't know. So why don't you ask? A. B. What else can happen? I know, those questions you don't ask when you read this story.
The thing is, he should have made sure the servant knew who was who.
If you go like that, probably this guy knew or already proclaimed or at least expressed his opinions very loudly that he doesn't like Bar Kamtza. So he will trust this guy to bring Kamtza and not Bar Kamtza because you know I don't like him.
Well, his servant should have.
How would he? So you have two options. It was known that he hates Bar Kamtza, or he would assume, look, I was told to bring Kamtza, not Bar Kamtza. I should bring Kamtza and not Bar Kamtza. But I have a question. So the question for you is like that. Why do you think he made that mistake? So one option can be, he made a mistake. What can you do? Second option is, maybe he knew that his owner, or this Balabait, disliked Bar Kamtza, and he thought, by bringing him to the meal, maybe he can make shalom. Maybe he can make shalom bait. Now, as I always say, don't shoot the messenger. This time, you probably need to shoot him. But he brought Bar Kamtza, so he brought him to the meal. Ata ashkeche dehavayativ. So, the Balabait comes along and he says hello to all the guests and he sees whom?
Bar Kamtza,
who sits at the table and eat. Amale michdei hahu gavra bal devava dehahu gavra hu my bait acha. Who said to whom? That's a tricky question. Amale, who is Amale? Who said to whom? Balabait. But how you would explain Michdeyahu Gavra Bal Devava Deahu Gavra? This guy is an enemy of the other guy. So who is talking here?
Another guy.
Do you see? We always remember the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, two people. Now we have already five. We have the Balabait that we don't know his name, which is very interesting. Why would the rabbis will reveal his name? Perhaps it never happened. But let's just make it as an assumption. Because don't forget, what is the initial question? Not why the temple was destroyed. The question is not why the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, but the question is the explanation of the Pasuk for Mishlei. So, we have Kamtza, we have Bar Kamtza, that we don't know who they are, but we know that another guy, unknown guy, who makes the meal, dislikes Bar Kamtza, likes Kamtza. Then there is the servant, the messenger, the guy who brings the guests, and we have another guy who sees Bar Kamtza and he knows about the bad blood between Bar Kamtza and the guy who has the meal, and he says, whoa, one second, this guy, what is he doing here in this meal? I'm sure that the host dislikes him.
Isn't it presumptuous of a servant to try to make shalom?
Very much. Very much. Especially if in our perception is that, you know, the servant just needs to do whatever the owner says. He doesn't need to think for himself. That's part of being a servant. So we don't know why he did it. My baitacha, so what are you doing here? So he's making what? A tzimes. He starts raising his voice. What are you doing here? Kum puk. Get out of here. Amale, oil ve'ati. I'm already here. Shafkan, leave me alone. Ve'yivna lach dmei ma de'achilna ve'shatina. I'll pay for my meal. Now, is that interesting?
I see a problem here. I like your suggestion that it's another guest who makes this comment, but another guest couldn't possibly say to Bar Kamsa, get out.
Very good. So, two options. Very good, Robert. One is, this guy was a close friend to the other guy. He says, look, I don't want to ruin his meal. I'm telling you, quietly, just get out of here. Mm-hmm. Bar Kamsa think, you know what? I'll pay him. Just keep it quiet. It's just not nice. Probably was a big meal. Because without it, you will not understand. If I will tell you, we are in a restaurant, I'm making a meal, and you come, even if I don't, if I dislike, I don't know you. I said, look, sorry, it's closed to the public. What would you do? No, please, let me in. I want to pay for my meal. It was probably a big meal. I don't know, maybe the president came, maybe the prime minister came. It was a meal. Oh, but let's wait for the... Very good. So it seems to be that there is an important meal, which also seems that the guy who is hosting the meal is a big macher. And if he dislikes someone, it's not good for that someone. So perhaps, if it's not the guy, the host, but rather a friend, maybe Bar Kamsa says to him, look, let's just do it quietly between us. So, Amale, lo. No. Now, perhaps this guy is not only a friend of the host, but also maybe he's like the executive director. You know, the guy who is looking around the meal that everything is okay, and he looks at him and says, you are not part of the invitees, that I know for sure. Amale, yahiv nalach dmei palka desudatich, I'll give you half of the meal. Which means, by the way, that Bar Kamsa is also a wealthy guy. Yeah. Right? Not everyone can say, okay, I'll pay half of the meal. He doesn't even know how much it cost. He says, I'll pay half of it. Amale lo. Amale yahiv nalach dmei kula seudatich. I'll pay for everything. Amale lo. No. Now, this is a very interesting thing. If this is really not the host, this guy has tremendous amount of power. If this is the host, we have little problems to understand the sentence that we read below. Above, sorry. Nakte beyade. So basically he took him by the hand and greeted him out, escorted him out. Now, what you see from here also, even though Bar Kamsa was a very wealthy person, I'm sure he was not treated like that, this guy, the host slash maybe the CEO, had more power, had more authority to do something that it's definitely not a nice thing to do. Amar, who is Amar? Bar Kamsa says, "Ohil vehavu yat ve'rabanan velo machube," because the rabbis were sitting there and they didn't say a thing. I guess it was a sin, not S-I-N, a sin, sin, S-C-E-N-E, which is like a big thing. Velo machube, and they didn't say anything to the guy. Shma mina kanicha lehu. Ah, they are probably comfortable with it. They probably dislike me too, or they approve inappropriate behavior, or the host have all the rabbis in his pocket. Three options. All of them are valid and open. Izel ichol beukurza beimalka. You know what? I'm going to get the government involved with it. What's the government? The Roman government. Azal amala la Caesar. So he went to the Caesar. Now, by the way, again, a detail that many people just glance over. The fact that he could go to Caesar means what?
He was
an influential person. Can you go to the Caesar?
Nope.
To the Roman Caesar? If you are just a simple Jew? Definitely not. You are talking about a wealthy person. Mar dubach Yehudai. The Jews rebelled against you. Amale mi yeima. Yeah, thanks. Who said? Amale shadar lehu korbana. Chazit imekarvan le. So send them an animal. Tell them to sacrifice it. That, by the way, Jews did it. Jews did sacrifice sacrifices that were brought by goyim. By the way, also the halacha says nedarim v'nedavot, goyim can send. They don't bring nesachim, but you can sacrifice nedarim v'nedavot, but they need to be olah. That's Gemara in Menachot. Okay. Chaziti mekarven le. See if they will sacrifice it. Azal shadar beyade egla tilta. So he send them a third ear calf or a calf that is really very had a great quality. Behadi dekaati shadi bemuma beniv svatayim. So what did he do, Bar Kamtza? He made a blemish in the lips. Now, it's also very interesting. Why in the lips?
It was obvious. It's easy to see the mum.
Not so much. We will see that the mum is not so much to see.
Speech.
I think it's about speech. There is another hidden reason here. It's something about
you mean
speech.
He was giving a message to the Jews that because
you didn't say anything the way they humiliated me. Look what's going on here. There is a blemish in your niv svatayim. By the way, niv svatayim, also the word nevuah, prophecy, comes from the word niv svatayim, the ability to speak. So, ve'amrile bedokin shebayin. Some people say, well, it was in the eye. Somewhere in the eye. Also the way you look at things. Duchta deledidan havemuma, veledidu lav mumahu. Now, there is a difference between how we view blemishes and how they view blemishes. For the Romans, if there was a blemish in the lips or in the eye, it's not considered as a blemish, it's considered as a complete great sacrifice. Jews, kol mum, any blemish, that does not work for us. So he was smart. Because if the Jews will say, oh, that was a blemish sacrifice, we couldn't bring it, Bar Kamtza will say what? No, it's not. The Roman Caesar will say, no, it's a perfect sacrifice. So, what's happened? Savur Rabbanan likruvei mishum shlom malchut. So he brought the sacrifice and he says, look, I'm a messenger from the Roman Caesar. And he asked that you will sacrifice this animal. So the rabbis looked at him and checked the animal and they saw the blemish. So Savur Rabbanan likruvei mishum shlom malchut. So the rabbi says, you know what, we should probably bring it because of what? Shlom Malchut. It's probably the right thing to do. You know, if not, Roman Caesar will be very upset with us. And then what will happen?
They'll kill us.
Amar leu Rabbi Zechariah ben Avikalus. Yomru ba'alei mumim krevin legabei mizbeach. So Rabbi Zechariah ben Avikalus, that just by the way, and it's totally not by the way, he was one of the spiritual leaders of the Kanaim. You remember the Kanaim? The rebels in Yerushalayim, the most extreme group, that basically said what? We need to fight against the Romans. So he told the rabbis, Yomru ba'alei mumim krevim la'mizbeach. No, you can't. Shlom Malchut? Yeah. But if people will see that you bring sacrifices that has blemish, they will say that you can bring sacrifices with blemishes. Okay. Savur lemiktale, delo leizel veleima. So the rabbi says, you know what? If we cannot sacrifice the animal, let's kill the guy. Let's kill Bar Kamtza. Why? Because if not, what will happen? He will go back to Roman Caesar and he will say what? The Jews rebelled against you. Why? Because they didn't bring a sacrifice. Which means death sentence to the entire Jewish people. Amar lehem Rabbi Zechariah, yomru, metil mum bakodashim yaharei. If we will kill him, people will say, ah, if someone puts a blemish in an animal, what should be his end? Death penalty, we can't do it. Now, it's an interesting thing. If you remember all the shiurim that we did for the last 6 weeks, again, we see what? One person against the majority. Minority against majority, where the minority has tremendous amount of power and authority. Which is very interesting. Now I want to ask you a question. Before we go further, are we facing here a halachic issue or a communal issue?
Communal.
Communal issue. The rabbis know that if someone put a blemish in an animal, it does not deserve death. Rabbi Zechariah ben Avikalus knows that what? that there is a concept of Shlom Malchut, that you don't want to get the government upset with you. But what is the question here?
But it's
Pikuach Nefesh. So Rabbi Chaim Avikadosh knows that too. He knows that he will go to Roman Caesar and that's a death penalty for the Jewish people. So what is the question here? What is the question here?
Is it going to provoke the rebellion or not?
Very good. Basically, we have a political question here. What should be our political maneuver against the government? Are we now going to take a statement and say, Gira be'inecha Satan, here Roman Caesar, we don't care, we are not afraid of you. Ah, we are not afraid of you. Does that ring the bell? What's the pasuk says? Ashrei Adam mefached tamid. Are we going to say, are we going to be afraid of you and say, yes, Shlom Malchut, okay, so you know what, let's bring a sacrifice with blemish. You know what, tomorrow the Roman Caesar will say, you know what, build for me an altar in the Beit HaMikdash. We will also say, yes, sure, Shlom Malchut. To what extent do you say we need to be nice? We need to be to tolerate the government? That's question number one. Question number two is, what's the alternative? How do you solve a complicated situation? None of the options are good ones. It's not a win-win. It's a lose-lose. Because every opinion has a valid point. Rav Schaya ben Avikalus has a valid point. We don't like it, but he has a valid point, and the rabbis has a valid point. So what do you do? So, yes.
It seems to me that there's still something missing. The Roman government gave him an animal, right? And Bar Kamsa made a move. Does the Roman government know that Bar Kamsa made a move?
No.
So what's missing here is, why is it a political statement? The Jewish community needs to take Bar Kamsa into custody and then bring the sacrifice to save the Jewish community, because Bar Kamsa is obviously not thinking clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll save the day. I mean, if you take Bar Kamsa into custody,
but
there's no political...
B, the same thing Abschar Rabbi Navikalus will say, oh, someone who put blemish in an animal, they throw him into prison for life, because he cannot get out, because the minute he gets out, he goes to Roman Caesar. Which means Rav Schaya ben Avikalus always was concerned what people will react or say if we make a decision. Now, what is missing here? There is... Yes?
Why weren't the Rabbanim concerned to begin with when the whole sitzuk started?
Oh, so you are going back. Why didn't they say anything? Very, so before we blame the rabbis, it's the easiest thing to do. before we blame the rabbis, we will deal with all the issues here, but there is one more thing missing. Yes?
How about an ultimate sacrifice? If you brought that sacrifice to the base of Middash, they found that we blemished, you could bring an alternate. So you bring an alternate. They just didn't happen to tell the Roman government that we switched it.
He will know, and he will say.
Who's Bar Kamsa?
Bar Kamsa.
But is Bar Kamsa there when he's shafted? Or
he yeah, because he's the messenger of the Roman Caesar. He needs to take a Snapchat with the animal.
Oh, I see.
You know, he needs to show it on our real FaceTime to the Roman Caesar. Now, there is another problem. You're looking a little bit on the tricks. I have another problem. Do you know people that when you talk to them about things and options, they always tell you no? Can we do that? The answer is... No. Can we do that? No. What is frustrating with people like that? I understand this one is no, this one is no. Tell me what you can do. Most of those people will never give you an option that you can. They will also tell you things that you cannot. Okay, I can't do this, I can't do that. Fully understand, or maybe not. But I understand. Tell me what I can do. The problem with Rav Schaya ben Avikalus is shut them down on every option, but he didn't create any other alternative. Nothing. If I was part of those rabbis, I would go to him and say, Rav Schaya, got you. You are very concerned, you are very cautious, you're always afraid what people... What can we do? He didn't say a thing. So what did they do? Probably nothing. So look what Rabbi Yochanan says. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. In vetanuto shel Rabbi Zecharia ben Avikalus echriva et beitenu, שרפה את היכלנו והגליטנו מארצנו. Now, what is the word in vetanuto? We will talk about that in a minute. So many people think it's anava, humility. Let's translate it like that for now. In vetanuto shel Rabbi Zecharia ben Avikalus, his humility, or the fact that he was so humble, destroyed our beitenu, our temple, sarfat echalenu, burnt our temple, v'iglitanu me'artzenu, and expelled us or exiled us from our land. So Rabbi Yochanan basically blames whom? For the destruction of the temple. Rabbi Zecharia ben Avikalus. But just one second. Oh, but the story started with Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. They said that Kamtza and Bar Kamtza destroyed Jerusalem. Now you say it's because of Zecharia ben Avikalus. And our initial question was, what's the explanation of what pasuk? By now you need to know it by heart. Ashrei Adam mefachet tamid, umakshe libo, ipol bera'a. Praiseworthy is the man who is always concerned, and someone who is hard in his heart will fall into a pitfall, or whatever it's called, a pit, an evil pit. So we have here three circles that we need to connect somehow, not now yet. We're going to put everything in the air, and then we'll bring it all together. Basically, we have this verse that it's like hovering around. Then we have the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, that we're going to find some folds there. And then we have a third one that basically led to Roman Caesar basically making a decision. Yes?
So who's the real villain in the story?
Oh, that's going to be the million-dollar question. That's going to be one of the most important issues here. It's very similar, by the way,
to
the...
The
what?
Kamtza has no part in the story.
Kamtza, yeah. Right. Kamtza was not even invited.
But he didn't know. He wasn't there.
Well,
he was not even there. Or maybe he was there, maybe he was not. But he was definitely
there.
Not invited by
his
that
son
guy.
Was there.
The what?
His son was there.
If okay, it's a if it's a father and a son. But when we mentioned Misken Kamtza, Kamtza was not even in the story. He's very infamous. Okay, so we obviously have an issue here. It's very similar, by the way, you know, to the story of Purim, Megillat Esther. Who is the villain? Haman or Achashverosh? Or Vashti? Or Haman's wife, Zeresh? Okay? There is always, when you have a story with so many figures, and some of them are unknown, it's really an interesting thing to know, okay, who is the main figure in the story. So let's just continue on a little bit. Shadar ilavayu le Niron Kesar. So Niron Kesar, Niron. The Roman Caesar came, Kikaati, Shadar gira le Mizrach atanafal birushalayim, le Maharav atanafal birushalayim, le Ar baruchot ha-shamayim atanafal birushalayim. So he started shooting arrows, and every arrow he sent fell on Yerushalayim, which means you should go ahead and occupy Jerusalem. Amar le Yenuka, p'sok li p'sukech. So he went to a young boy who happened to be Jewish, and he told him, you know, what did you learn in school today? Amar le venatati et nikmati be'edom b'yad ami Yisrael. Which means Hashem already decided he's going to destroy the Bet HaMikdash, and the messengers for that will be Edom, Rome. Amar kutshabrichu bai lecheru vebeite. Hashem wanted to destroy his temple. Now, this entire story sounds very interesting, saying the least. You want to tell me that Niron took a Jewish child to ask him if he should go ahead and conquer Jerusalem, and that would be a heavenly sign for him to go ahead and do it? I think Roman Caesar decided to conquer Jerusalem because he had enough from those Jews. It happened to be that also Hashem made a decision that the Beit HaMikdash will be destroyed. But we have our own Jewish perspective on things. Uvai lechipure yade be'ahu gavra. So Niron says, you know what? I don't want to be this evil messenger. Why should I be the evil guy, the villain, and to be God's messenger in terms of destroying Jerusalem? Arak ve'azal ve'igayer ve'nafak mimeno Rabbi Meir. So Niron Kesar, based on our Jewish tradition, converted to Judaism, and Rabbi Meir came out of him. Yeah, that should be our reaction, huh? Niron Kesar. Okay, where is that coming from? Shadre ilavele Aspasianus Kesar. So they sent Aspasianus. Ata. Tsar Allah Tlachani. So he put a siege over Jerusalem for 3 years. Have a Beuhanu Tlata Atiris. So in Jerusalem there were three very wealthy guys. Nakdimon ben Gurion, ben Kalba Savua, ben Tzitzit HaKasat. Three guys. One was Nakdimon ben Gurion, the other one was Kalba ben Savua, and the other guy was ben Tzitzit HaKasat. And they got names, not because that was the names that were named when they were born, but rather because of their actions. Nakdimon ben Gurion, shenakda lo chama ba'avuro, that the son stopped for him. What was the story with him? We will see. I don't know if you will see it here. No. Nakdimon ben Gurion, he made a deal, and he did it for the Jewish people, and he sold a few things, I think, to a non-Jew, and he said to him, "I'll give you the money, and I'll give you the barrels of wine or whatever it was." And by that time arrived and he didn't have the money. And in a way, there was a miracle and the son was basically stopped or something like that. So the time really did not pass. And also something happened to the wine. It became more expensive and he was able to pay his debt. So he was called Nakdimon Ben Gurion. By the way, it's also an interesting thing because the only one that we know that the son was held for him was Yehoshua bin Nun, not Nakdimon ben Gurion. But okay, Nakdimon ben Gurion. Ben Kalba Savua, shekol hanechnas lebeito kshehu raev kekelev, yotze shehu savea. So Kalba Savua, someone who has food for everyone and can feed everyone. By the way, Kalba Savua was, according to another tradition, there was mechutan with Rabbi Akiva, which is an interesting thing also. ובן ציצית הקסת, שהייתה ציצתו נגררת על גבי קסתות, היא כדאמרי שהייתה קסתו מוטלת בין גדולי חום רומי. So, בן ציצית הקסת, קסת is from the word pillow. So, what's happened is that his garments, he will not step on the street. They will put like pillows underneath him, so his garments will not even touch the dirty street. Or, that he had an endowed chair next to the Roman government. So he was very influential. Chad amar lehu, ana zayna lehu bechite vesari. Vechad amar lehu bedechama o bedemalcha umashcha. Vechad amar lehu bedetzivei veshapchu rabanan ledetzivi. So what's happened there? Those three guys, those three wealthy guys, they basically said, we're going to want to feed and to take care and sustain the Jewish people for all the time there is that siege. We will do it with barley and wheat and cement and straw and all of that. Wood, we going to supply everything for the Jewish people. That's their wealth. So, what's happened? Havolu lemeizan esrim v'chad hashata. So they were able to sustain the Jewish people basically on the calculations for 21 years. Hava behu hanu biryoni. So, like any other Jewish community, you have the wealthy guys, you have the rabbis, and you also have the what?
Revolutionaries.
Because it's highly politically tension, charge situation. You have the Romans put a siege on you. You already heard that the Romans, when they capture a city, there is no, it's not fun. You still have the Beit HaMikdash, you still have those messianic dreams, and the extremists said, you know, we can defeat them. Amrelu Rabbanan nifok v'niabit shlama be'adayu. Let's go out and let's make peace with them. We are in a position of somewhat strength because they cannot defeat us with siege because we have enough food for 21 years. The Romans cannot put a siege for 21 years. And we have the walls. So, you know what? Let's make peace with them. Lo shavkinu, they did not let the rabbis do it. You know, everyone has this nostalgic, especially the rabbis. They always listen to us. Huh, sure. Read history. They listened to you whenever they wanted. Here you have the biryonim. Probably, I don't want to say just a bunch of guys. But my guess, not the most educated ones, they probably had a spiritual rabbi with them, which, by the way, historically it was Rav Zecharia ben Avi Kalus, and they told the rabbis that probably represented the majority of the people, told them what? No, lo shavkinu. What is lo shavkinu? They didn't just say no. They will not let them leave the city, which means, who is running the gates? Those billionim. You have a siege outside and you have a siege inside. Now, if you, by the way, remember the story from last time, you remember Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He had to pretend that he's dead in order to get out. So, Amrulehu, Nipuk v'ne'avid krava behadayu. The bullies, the extremists said, no, you will join our army and we should fight the Romans. Amrelu Rabbanan, lo mistaya milta. It's not going to work. You know, God is not with us. We know Hashem wants to destroy the Beit HaMikdash. According to some opinions, there were already signs that the Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. The rabbis told them, it's not going to work. But what? So the rabbi says, it's not going to work. They did offer another solution. What was the solution? Let's make peace. But the bullies didn't want it. So, what the bullies do? What they know to do? What they know how to do? They bully you into a situation. Kamu kalanu lehanu amabre dechite vesari ve'avi kafna. So what did they do? They knew that the rabbis will be as strong as long as there is food in the city. But if there is no food in the city, and there is no wood in the city, and there is no straw in the city, there is nothing in the city, there is starvation. In starvation, people like to go to the extreme. And they will join us and we will fight the Romans. So that's what they did. They burnt everything in the city. So now you ask me, who is the villain? The Romans outside or the bullies inside? They caused starvation. Now, how many Jews died as a result of that starvation? No idea. But my guess, many of them. So, Martha, so just to illustrate the starvation, I brought you a story. Martha bat Paitus, atirata de Yerushalayim havia. Martha bat Paitus was one of the wealthiest ladies in Yerushalayim. Shadarta leshlucha ve'amrale. So she sent her housekeeper, and she told him, zil aitili smida. So she told him, please bring me what will be smida. Smida will be, what is in English smida? The what?
White bread?
Yeah, bread out of wheat, I think. Made out of wheat, white wheat. So, at the Azal Izdeban, until he or she went, it was already sold. Ata amra lasmida leika chivarta ika. So there is probably one that it's a little bit less quality. Amra lezilaitili. So go ahead and bring it to me. At the Azal Izdeban. So until she went, it was already sold. Not such a smart housekeeper.
No,
just buy it and then ask. Maybe maximum you bring it back. But no, it was not so smart. Ata ve'amra lechivra leika gush kiraika. I don't have white, I guess it's black, or it's made out of barley or whatever. Amar lezil aitili ade azal izdeban. No. Hava shlifa masana. So she took off her shoes. Amar leipuk ve'achzi im ashkachna midi lemeichal. I will go out. I can't trust my housekeeper. She's definitely not so qualified. I'll go by myself. And I'll see if there is something to eat. Which means she had nothing at home. We are talking about the wealthiest lady in Yerushalayim. So you can imagine if you are not so wealthy. Itiv leparta bekara vemata. She touched the street. And I guess it was so dirty. And my guess, corpses were all over the place. And she was so disgusted by that she died.
She died.
She couldn't stand the filth, the smell, and she died. Kari alea Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, araka becha ve'anuga, asher lo nista, Kafragla. we read it in Eicha, that she was so delicate that she never, her feet never touched the ground. When she touched the ground, she died. Ika de Amri, Grogrot de Rabbi Tzadok Achla ve'it nisa ve'meta. De Rabbi Tzadok yativ 40 shnin betanita de lolich rav bet mikdasha. Ki av ve'achil midia ve'mitchazi me'evrai, I will translate in a minute. Ve'chi av yabari, ma'iti le grogrot, ma'itz ma'yehu ve'shadi lehu. So what's happened? Rabbi Tzadok fasted for 40 years that the Yerushalayim will not be destroyed. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai went out to meet Roman Caesar and he asked for Yavne, so he also asked for what? That they will cure Rabbi Tzadok. So what Rabbi Tzadok will do, he will suck on grogrot and then spit them out. He couldn't swallow. And she, because she was so hungry, she ate one of them. The one that he already swallowed. And she got sick and died. When she was about to die, when she was very sick, so she took all the money, all the jewelry, and she threw him into the street. What do I need money? I can't eat it. And I can't buy food. That they will throw their money to the streets. Okay, so let's stop here. And now we are in the questions mode. Okay, what we have here, we start from the beginning. So let's go through the sequence of events. So the first stage was, we have a pasuk, a verb, a verse from Mishle, from Proverbs. Praiseworthy is the man who is always concerned, and the one who is hard in his heart will fall into a pitfall. And we don't know what is the explanation for it. In order to illustrate it, or in order to explain it, we have some stories here. We have the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, which is a little bit interesting. And then we have the story of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avikalus. And we all need to try to feed those stories into this verse. Okay, so now, before I ask any other questions, based on the Talmudic paragraph, do you have an answer of what is Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid? Do you have an explanation for that pasuk? Yes.
That Bar Kamtza should have been afraid to take action on what happened to him because of the reverberation, the ramifications from the Roman government. He hardened his heart.
Okay, good. So one explanation is it's about all Bar Kamtza. So the entire pasuk is about Bar Kamtza, who basically was not concerned about the ramifications of his action. And also he hardened his heart, which is, by the way, a reminder for whom? Who hardened his heart?
Paro.
Paro, at least in the first five, he himself did it to himself. And you know what? Maybe it's about Bar Kamtza. Okay. One option. Second option. By the way, if that's true, where the Talmudic paragraph had to stop? We don't need
a Talmudic paragraph?
Yeah. Do we need all of that in order to explain the pasuk? Yeah. We don't need Rav Zecharia ben Avikalus, and we don't need Rabbi Yochanan.
True. We don't need it, but Rav Zecharia ben whatever his name Avikalus reminds us of the guy that said Hakolatova, Nachamish Gamzu. He got killed because he thought everything was for the best, right?
But what's the similarity between him and Nachamish Gamzu?
Oh. What's the similarity is that he was overly concerned about what everybody's going to say on all four sides.
Okay, so now you're saying something else. So now you're saying that the pasuk might be on whom? On Rabbi Zechariah ben Avikalus. That he was too concerned about what will happen, and at the end, they all fell into a pit. So that's a different explanation. It's not about Bar Kamtza, it's about Rabbi Zechariah ben Avikalus.
Because it all changes, the narrative changes.
Okay.
It goes from Bar Kamtza into Rabbi whatever
Rabbi Zechariah, yes.
I think you always have to be concerned about
We don't live in a vacuum. So at each stage, nobody was thinking of what are going to be the ramifications of their actions.
Okay, good. So now we say, you know what? All the stories basically feed in into the explanation. Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid. Praiseworthy is the man who is always concerned. However, if you are so concerned and basically your heart is hardened because of that, you will fall because you need to make a decision.
That's right.
And you need to know the ramifications of that decision. So now we can understand that maybe the pasuk goes on Bar Kamtza, maybe it goes on Rav Schar ben Avikalus, or maybe it goes also on the rabbis. Now let's take a look at the seuda, the meal. Let's make it as dramatic as we can. Okay, now let's think that we are in a Teatron Abima. So the guy comes in. There is a big meal. The rabbis probably sit, well, in the Mizrach, right? And there is a nice meal, and everyone talks, and this and that and the other. And then Bar Kamtza comes. Now, the fact that Bar Kamtza comes and everyone, or at least someone, recognizes him, means that he was also a macher in the community. He was definitely wealthy or connected to the government, as we said before. Which means he was not just a Joe Schmo, he was a guy who was known in the community. So he makes noise. He comes. Then the host or / CEO comes to him and say, what are you doing here? If I was him, or if you were him, what would you say? What do you mean, what am I doing here? This guy told me to come here. This guy brought me here. Who is this guy? The messenger. The messenger that the host sent came to me and told me to come. Now, I was surprised too because, you know, we are not best friends. We're not really going in the same circles. But he told me, so I came. So ask him. Instead, Bar Kamtza says to him what? I'll pay. When you have a guy like that, what does it say about Bar Kamtza? He thinks that what?
Money buys.
It's all money. Yes.
I have to say, I grew up in New York. I went to Jewish day schools my whole life. The only way that I was taught that the reason Yerushalayim was destroyed was because of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, because of Sinat Chinam. Today is the first time I ever heard some of the things I heard afterwards about the rabbis. I heard about Martin Baitis. But I never imagined that there were so many wealthy, powerful, influential Jews who could have the ear of the Roman emperor and negotiate and convince him not to destroy Yerushalayim.
Right. And the idea is?
I always imagined us as being these poor, nevertheless, you know, weak Jews and this big, terrible Roman army.
And you know
even
what?
Even the very old man I didn't learn about until a few years ago.
And I will just add to it, you know, Roman Empire, you need to divide, I'm not a historian, but I will say that the Roman Empire, at least at the beginning, did not want to destroy Jerusalem. They want one thing, money. And they, unlike Sanherib or Babylonians, first that they want to mix the nations and to bring this one. The Romans created autonomies. And they had some religious requirement, but the highest requirement was, give me the money. That's it, give me the money. Later on, there was Gzeirot Dat. And the things changed when Bar Kokhba came along, and that's Andrianus Caesar's decrees. Again, I'm not a historian, so I can't tell you exactly the period of times. But at the beginning, look, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, for example, later on, he and Antoninus Caesar were great friends, best friends.
And Nero converts to Judaism in this.
Yeah,
story.
Based on that story,
but
right?
Which
means Judaism was compelling. Interesting.
Before
interesting enough.
The same time as
yeah? Right? So, it depends. It can be borderline eras or a little bit before.
So they were still open.
It was still open. So the idea is yes, it's not a bunch of Nebuchadnezzar Jews, you know, holding on to Yerushalayim. It's talking about people who can feed. I don't know how many people were in Yerushalayim. It was definitely not what we have today, okay? But let's say 20,000 Jews.
And that was only 3 people.
3 people that can feed 20,000 Jews for 21 years. It's amazing. So, basically, what do we have here? So the guy says, I'll pay for it. I'll pay for my meal. He says, no, I'll pay for half of the meal. I'll pay for the entire meal, like that. He doesn't even ask, how much is a manna? You know, how much is a main course? You know, how much that costs?
You have to ask your uncle.
Exactly. He is such a guy that says, here, take the check, fill up the numbers. It's signed already. I took care of it. This is the amount of money and connection the guy has. And that guy says, I don't need your money. I am willing to what? To humiliate you publicly and escort you out. Now, I'm sure that it became louder and louder. Right? I mean, those are people. אני אשלם לך הכל, לא רוצה לשמוע, right? It's becoming, and if there are Israelis, yeah, it's going to become loud. And the rabbis sit there. Now, I'm sure it's uncomfortable. It's becoming uncomfortable. Okay. So the question now is, rabbis, I think every rabbi will agree, this is not the way to treat a person. But they sit there. So they sit there and they don't say anything. Now let's open it up for options. They don't say anything because they also dislike Bar Kamtza. And they say, ah, Baruch Hashem, tzadikim melachtam naset al yedei acharim. Righteous people, their job is being done by others. Right, sof, we are done with this guy. We're going to escort him out and this nudnik will not see his face anymore. Option number one. Option number two, they totally dislike what they saw. But they were terrified. They were terrified to express their opinions. Why? Because they will not win. Kamtz, the guy, the host, that we don't know who he is, we don't know how influential he is, and how he will react if they will go ahead and defend Bar Kamtza. A. B. Maybe Bar Kamtza will take it into granted and will not protect the rabbis from the host. Third, perhaps, and this is based on some academic studies that I saw, it might be that the rabbis were supported by the wealthy people of Yerushalayim. And maybe they got funds from Bar Kamtza and from the host. So basically it's a lose-lose situation for both of them. So the rabbis decided, because of all these considerations, to do what? Nothing. Which sometimes is great, but sometimes it's an awful decision to do. Especially when in certain circumstances, even if you're going to lose or you're going to pay personal price, if it's not right, you need to say it's not right. But they didn't. So those rabbis sat there in that room and said nothing. And what was really the upsetting detail for Bar Kamtza? What did he say? Why did he go to the Roman Caesar? Look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, Oil, because Oil, Oil ve'avu yat ve'rabanan ve'lo machu be, because the rabbi sat there and they did not machu, they did not rebuke him. Shema mina kanicha lehu. They agree with that. And because of that, I'm going to go to Roman Caesar. So what was the upsetting thing for him? Not the fact that the host hates him. I know it. Not the fact that the CEO humiliated him. He was upset that the rabbis should have said something. Now I want to ask you a question. Why would he come with that expectation? So one, morally, who should carry the flag of morality and ethics? The rabbis. A. B. I funded those rabbis for the past 3 years. I gave them scholarship. I took their children for my business. And that's the way they pay me back? Ah, so he gives a better check. I'm going to the Roman Caesars. I'm going to what?
He makes a halachic problem.
He, why?
He makes a halachic problem. So the rabbis have to make the decision.
Okay.
Wait,
now, says Bar Kamtza, I am going to create an issue for them that they will need to make a decision, and whatever decision they're going to make will be wrong. Now, I know that I'm painting Bar Kamtza as a manipulator, villain, and I'm sorry. But this is a reading. I'm not saying the reading or the only reading of the Gemara, but it's an option.
But I agree with you. I mean, why would he do that? He is jeopardizing the whole community, Jewish community.
Because of his Gaiva.
Religious Gaiva.
Okay, now, we need to ask a question that we never ask. What did he think?
What
are you... Excuse my language. Are you out of your mind? What is it? Tamut nafshim plishtim? What are you, Shimshon? Samson? You killed yourself with the plishtim, but don't kill yourself with Jews. You know what will happen. Think about it. You know what? But the thing is like that. Now I want to create another manipulation on top of it. Maybe he thought, those rabbis, they are selling themselves, basically, right? I want to make a mockery out of it. I will bring a sacrifice that I know the rabbis are going to say, bring it because of shalom, because of peace with the government. And then I will go to everyone that I know and I will say, look at those rabbis. They sell themselves to their host. They sell themselves to whom? To their government. Do not have any trust with those rabbis.
Because they're not authentic.
They sell their soul.
He didn't believe
that they will say that they will agree to Rav Zecharia ben Avikalus and they will agree not to bring it. Perhaps what's happened was that he miscalculated at the end. And now, so after the miscalculation, he still had the decision, he still had the chance to say what? Okay, whatever. I miscalculated, I'll go home. But instead, he got so upset, he went back to the Roman Caesar to tell on the Jews. So, what we're going to do...
Isn't he an example of
Ashrei Adam? Yafe me'od. So it can be Bar Kamtza, but what we're going to do, we will conclude now, so you'll have something to think about. Bring it next time, so they don't need to print again. I don't like to kill trees. Just keep it here, and I'll give it to the front lady at the desk, and she'll keep it for us. But I want you to think outside of the box about this thing, and to not to forget our initial question. What is our initial question? What is the meaning of this pasuk, Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid? And how is that connected to what Rabbi Yochanan is trying to tell us? So this is basically the idea, to take something that is so famous and to reanalyze it, or to do to restructure the story and to try to find some relevant lessons for us. Because one of the things that I would like to push is sometimes no decision is also a decision.
That's right.
Which obviously has tremendous relevant messages and lessons for what we face as a community, as individuals, as families, as religion, as political bodies, whatever it is. We definitely have those decisions to make. So Bezrat Hashem will continue the following week. Early Shabbat Shalom.
It's interesting that what's happening now with this rabbi, with the Hasidim of this rabbi, what's his name? You know, the big people that they're demonstrating against the army. But it's not about the army. Do you know that it's not about the army?
It's
happening. And even though the Rabbanim are, writing letters and the Askanim in America, they have put out a letter saying, are these yeshivas that are run by Rabbi Auerbach, are they the yeshivas you